Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. On this rather chilly evening, I'm not sure what the temperature is, but I'm sure it's about, it's a nice 44 degrees out Fahrenheit. It'd be so nice if it was 44 Celsius. So today I want to talk about a subject that I touched on a lot in previous seasons, but there's kind of a reason to recap and maybe advance our thinking a little bit further in this. And part of it has to do with, one, a lot of you are new, and you probably haven't gone back to see the other episodes, and so the subject matter is completely new, or you've seen a couple, I haven't seen them all. But the other aspect of this is that my own brain continues thinking about this profusely. And so I think I have new takes on this sort of thinking, which is, I'm not sure what I'm going to call this. I think I might call this Ether is Us, or We Are Ether, but maybe I've already done that title. Got to make sure I haven't done it again. It's a very fascinating concept. So let me lay this on you and you can decide if you want to keep watching. I think that we are all made out of a fundamental particle that I'm going to call ether. What Faraday through Tesla, Ohm, Volta, all those folks acknowledged it. They invented everything that's making this show possible. Einstein invented jack shit, okay? When you have a common medium that not only is responsible for everything that you perceive as reality, and the matrix reality doesn't matter. This would be what they're using to push us together. You have a lot of avenues that open up in terms of communication. What if we could prove it? You know, we don't have machines. Well, actually, we do have methods of sensing ether going 50 times the speed of light. But what if we could really harness it? And I think there's a lot of people that can. And again, when you move your hand, you're moving ether, right? It's just not going to turn anything magical because we're not converting it into energy from the perspective of it anymore. Tesla's Wardenclyffe Tower was 100% dealing with ether. His entire vision of the world was, look, we're going to get everything switched back to ethereal engines, which is, we think, the Egyptians or the pre-dynastic race that was in the Egyptian area. We're pretty certain that the pyramids were 100% energy generating plants, which I've talked about several times. I won't beat that up on this episode. But imagine that if you're made of the same thing, and there's a way to think about this a little bit differently. My instinct with all the research that I've done and studying every project that I can get my hands on that is like a collider type object, it suggests to me, and I've said this several times on episodes related to ether, that we are renewed as quickly as possible every unit of time that we can measure. What's that mean? Well, imagine, just for the sake of argument, this is probably an exaggeration for sure, but you had a pole going through your body. It comes in the top of your head and it goes down the bottom of your feet. It's not, and it's never going to be that absolute. It's going to go out the palm of your hands, any orifice, whatever, I don't know. But if you're renewed every nanosecond or nanosecond or however, whatever the shortest amount of time is, if ether is moving 50 times the speed of light, just imagine there's going to be a bit of a delay in the circuit for it, a particle of ether to hit your scalp, start generating and regenerating what you are, and then pop out your foot. Water that acts like a current, as I always say, starts at the top of that little vortex. And it spins all the way down the little tornado and goes down the drain, or if it's in a river, it moves down river. And that provides an ecosystem of these particles to travel throughout the universe and become everything. Your pencil, a rock outside your house, you, your brother, your sister, your mother, whatever. Beings on other planets, beings in space, maybe some organic being that can live in space. We assume that can't happen because when we freeze down to, what is it, 0 Kelvin or something, we tend not to move very much. But perhaps there's something that can move because it doesn't need that vibrational reality, or maybe it's made of something else in addition to ether that would keep it living. But let me give you a little example of sort of what I'm thinking and what have been thinking for several months and since my last ethereal episode. You have to know these subjects that I repeat are very near and dear to my heart. So if you go in the playlist and you find something being beat up, it's no mystery to you that I'm fascinated about the moon hoax scandal of NASA. So I talk about it a lot. We review it every once in a while. This one's gigantic to me because I want other more qualified electrical engineers to hear this content. Maybe you even know someone who is one and they've never seen the show. They're never going to organically find it. But you point them to the episode and you just listen to this dude for a split second. Understand that ether was a concept that only Einstein's group got rid of, a guy that never invented anything and who stole everything that he ever said he invented. Go see my Einstein episode, which I think is, was it episode 1 or 400, one of the two? 501 or sorry, 401 or it's 400, somewhere in there. But we need to start thinking about how we can start controlling and tapping into the smallest particle in the universe that we know of. You might say, well, hey, we got these colliders and they're going down to quarks, and so we're already doing as much as we possibly can. I think that your problem is you're now inside an official scientific organization that is going to hoard information, never let you know what's going on. They do satanic rituals in their basement in the Hadron Collider in Europe. I mean, give me a break. Those are the people you're going to trust with empirical information? I don't know that they're intelligent enough to actually find anything new. All they've done is memorize and repeat things to get their degrees. And when it comes up to being the elders that they've been standing on the entire time that they've been alive, they're like an Einstein. Well, what can we steal from somebody who hasn't revealed it to the world, you know, someone who put in for a patent? Can we steal that and say it's ours? Just to survive one more minute in our faux life of being actually intelligent, as opposed to being a memorizer and repeater. What's interesting is it used to be that a lot of people in this world were very, very smart, especially in first world countries. And so when you were to go into a room and start to pitch something that you think is a really good idea, these elders of the universe, both men and women, remember Madame Curie, man, the woman that found the first moth in a circuit relay, who got us to coin the phrase, she wrote down, I found a bug in the computer, literally. Women, you've been involved since the very beginning. Einstein's wife was the one that made him sound smart. But when they used to pitch something new to a group of folks, folks could smell BS a mile away. At least 150 years ago, they could. Now, just repeating the dogma that exists on paper will start blowing away 99% of the world, and therefore, they don't have to invent anything new. They just have to keep repeating dogma to be called a genius by their family. No research, no critical thinking whatsoever, just a zombie that can repeat. It's like a bad low-end computer. I learned this today. Did you know this is the way it worked? So in order to get into the ethereal conversation, you immediately filter out the blue pill people. You filter out these ignoramuses, to pull that old word back, a little bit of malarkey there. You filter them out. And then you only have intelligent people in the room. People who believe that ether exists are the folks that have had to weather 120 years worth of Einstein's crap and everybody who jumped on his shoulders to say that ether didn't exist. That's good company to be in once you filter out all those morons. I mean, you seriously do. And yeah, you might have a bunch of these people I'm calling morons that have memorized and repeated or memorized, let's just say, encyclopedias of crap that I can't repeat back to you. Maybe even some really good stuff. If I want to know how something works, I'll go look it up. And they already know it. So I'm not saying that they don't have a pile of information that's useful. The problem is that they usually lack the original thinking required to activate that information outside of the paradigm boxes that the information has been presented to them with, right? We look at computer components. Go talk to anybody who's an electronic specialist, if you're not one yourself. You will know that even though we're miniaturizing things really, really tiny, I mean, ungodly small, it's still the same old stuff that Tesla invented, refined, et cetera, et cetera. We're not inventing new things that often. We have resistors and capacitors and coils and transistors and diodes. We're not inventing a new thing much. Even a microchip is full of all those basic things printed in a silicon chip. Millions and billions of them. And we can do amazing things with them once we get them made. And perhaps we don't need a new one. Perhaps we're good. The problem with those components is that they only work on electron theory. They rely on electrons. Without electrons, none of those components function. All right. Well, that's where a quantum computer gets really interesting. We're finally breaking the mold and going subatomic, or at least atomic, to create a new way of computing. I'll tell you, man, if I was young, young in the sense that it was like, I don't know, especially 30 or less, I would be spending all my time learning quantum computing, getting involved with whatever projects, go get a degree in whatever's going to help them hire you and jump in. Because that's going to be the mind-blowing frontier. Now, what the interesting thing there is that they're using atoms that spin, that also have properties by which if we resonate electricity through them, we can actually control their spin and freeze it. But we use the spinning electron to figure out, it basically calculates every conceivable number between 0 and 1, and we can use those in computational algorithms to figure out something, to explore a maze from every conceivable place your feet could be, all at the same time. Instead of going into the maze and getting lost, oh, that's not a good place, going to this, oh, that's not a good. Quantum computer marches an infinite number of people into the maze and goes, I found it, instantaneously. That's exciting. Imagine that we were to acknowledge ether again in a mass community methodology, and now the pressure to keep you from going down that path is getting more and more infinite. But if you could, and we could figure out a way to observe and manipulate ether, not only do we get zero-point energy systems, but we might get a computer that runs almost backwards in time, but so fast. You just have your computer, you know, spit out an answer randomly in your kitchen, and you're like, whoa, what the hell is this? And then you go, honey, you know, where'd you put my keys? And then, oh, wait a minute. Let me read the fortune cookie out of the ethereal computer, and it just said, in the bathroom. I didn't know what that meant until I consciously thought, because it's already thinking way ahead of you. Stuff like that, you know. In the movie Altered States, I've mentioned it once before, one of the opening act dialogues that is mind-blowing, and you can see it on YouTube. I think you just go Altered States dialogue. It's going to be William Hurt talking about trying to find the inception point of life in the universe, which is really consummate to the beginning of the universe. Forget the Big Bang. And his theory was, because of the causality model of all things in the universe, the butterfly effect, you could, you know, theoretically reverse engineer all of the causality of the reality that you're seeing today. But you would have to have, just like the book Chaos says, you will have to have a capture of all the things in your area, all the particles in your area, all the things that have ever affected anything. You have to have one snapshot of all the particles and all their vectors, And then you can reverse engineer it. Without that, you can only get a partial probability of what might have caused what you're talking about, what you're asking it about. What's interesting to me is that ether being what I think it is and what the, you know, most brainiac people in the world figured out, let's just say that you and I share in any one lifetime a few ethereal particles, if not millions and billions of them, meaning one that went through me in so many hours will go through you because it is being pushed around the surface of the earth, hence providing the gravity that we have. Now imagine that there's more than one that goes through me and then it goes through you. This chain, for whatever reason, let's just say, I'm going to make this up, so please don't take this literally, but what if ether particles travel within some sort of confined fabric? Meaning, instead of being free-flowing pinballs flying all over the universe, they're more like train cars. In fact, there's multiple ether particles that make up every car. There are some interesting binding forces, which means basically currents, where they trap each other together. That's how ether makes everything that we see today. Again, the current isn't really a current. The current is just water behaving in a way that we call it a current. So verbs become nouns in this world. Well, let's just say I have like a nucleic chain equivalent of ethereal particles that go through me, and I touch them in a particular way. I'm thinking a particular thought. I'm having a particular feeling at the moment that these things transcend through my body, being a temporary construct, right? And then they float to you, and they don't change that much. Or they get through four or five other people first, and then they go into you. But maybe they just go through some rocks. Maybe they just go through the air, something that's not going to be having a complex thought as far as we know. And then there's like a little telegram message inside of it that I added to it. The one that I got had other people's telegrams embedded in it. And if it resonates with you, let's say the two of us think the same, then all of a sudden, you're picking up on my frequency. One of the catalyst moments about this that drove this episode was a comment someone made this morning, which actually would have been yesterday, the 28th. He said, I can't even believe it was my episode about the Matrix gods. And he said, I can't believe you just said this. You made an episode about this because I was just telling my friends the exact same thing. Wow. You know, just mind blowing. And so I thought about that all day. And I thought, yeah, that is wild because this stuff happens. We all know that little thing that happens when you learn a new word. And then all of a sudden you hear the word everywhere. You learn a new concept and everyone's talking about that concept all of a sudden. We typically minimize that experience because what we say or what we tend to do is to look at something very simple is that you didn't notice it until you knew it existed. Well, that's definitely a lot of truth to that. We've talked about that a lot. If you can't conceive of something, then you really can't interact with it much, nor have a thought about it. That's why when someone accuses you of doing something that you can't conceive of, something bad. You know, you did this to me. And you're like, man, I can't even conceive of having that thought. So there's no way I actually did it to you, especially not on purpose. Maybe what I did kicked over a few different things and made you it look like I meant to do that, but that's not the truth. But perhaps the listener is tuned to me. Tune to my voice, tune to my spirit. I'm assuming I'm attuned to you guys as well, to be honest. But it might be a little easier because I'm the one in the camera. I got a voice. There's a resonating ID to who I am. And maybe even though the packet of information that's going through me and zipping around the world and getting to the listener, because perhaps whatever's bouncing around goes through all of us instantaneously. 50 times the speed of light? Well, if they did those calculations on how fast Santa would have to go to visit every home in a night, and it's this funny, really high number, something like that. But perhaps, you know, I record the episodes before I air them, And so it's bouncing around in all of our consciousness. And then poof, you got it. You recognize the conversation. It happened to correlate with thoughts you've already had before you ever heard I ever existed. Maybe me talking about the matrix or talking around the matrix kept the listener around to kind of go, hey, he's kind of thinking like me. Truth is, I'm thinking like you too. But it zips through you and you have this big conversation and then here comes the video. The cause and effect that might be the butterfly effect is, for whatever reason, I can't shake it out of my head, like I said in the episode, and then you can't either. And so here's a little telegram that makes sense to you. It's a bit like when you go get your mail. Today, mail, at least in America, is just gobs and gobs of crap. And so I don't get my mail out of my mailbox. Probably about once a week, I go get it. It's nothing. It's just a bunch of paper versions of bills I have online. As many times as I tell them I don't want any paper, they still send it to me. Thanks for going paperless. We'll send a Argentina rainforest to your house in the next 2 days. But what happens? You pull all this crap out of your mailbox. Without even reading what's on the mail, you can see junk mail. You can just feel it with blindfold on and just know that's that stupid newspaper I get that tells me something I don't care about. You can feel a really hard, you know, 50 gauge or 50 pound print, which is a postcard from some real estate place. You just know it's not for you. The minute you start feeling an envelope and it starts to feel like it has a little credit card in it and you think you have a card coming to you, well, that's the one you keep and you open up. But we look at it and we identify with it. If we identify with it, we keep it. If we don't, we let it go. And that could be just as simple as the packet information that's going between us. What I can't shake is the following. We are somehow conscious. We are alive. Something is making us have that feeling. I'm always telling you we're symbiotic. Soul, body, creates the mind in between, which is a Hindu thing that goes back probably 300,000 years for all I know. So I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, repeating probably poorly their overall philosophy. The thing is we do have definitions for life, and I think that's extremely important. But I think we get too myopic in our thinking. We tend to say this is the definition of life and anything outside that definition is not alive. When I was a kid, I was told that, you know, animals don't have souls. And I don't think they were really talking about the cats and dogs that are domesticated because people develop relationships with animals. And there's old Twilight Zone where a guy dies and he and his dog go to the other side and he's trying to find heaven. And of course, his dog goes with him because his dog has a soul. But again, a friend of mine told me a long time ago, and what's funny is I mentioned to him this again, he's younger than me. I said, well, you know, you said that to me and at first I thought you were nuts. And then I thought, well, let me put some more thought into that. And he was at my house and he goes, you know, I really honestly believe everything's alive. And he pointed at my coffee table and he goes, like, I think that could be alive. At first I was like, what? You know, like, are you just being existential for the sake of being existential? Like, define to me why you think that's alive. Don't just say you think it's alive. I mentioned that back to him about 10 years ago. He says, I said that? I always think that's really weird. But I thought about it. I thought, well, I do also believe that a soul is a separate thing. Whatever that thing is made out of, I think that is the tangible dimension of emotion, love, whatever. The question I might, you know, just put out there is, could something be alive like a rock, like a planet? Native Americans thought Earth was Mother Earth, which I think is beautiful. The way it really makes sense to me is that you must, well, you know, you don't have to, but if you do acknowledge a substrate that we're all made out of, then you can start getting into almost communication protocols. If you've ever been inside a deep forest, or even the woods, I should say, trees, and you just sit for a second, listen to your voice, listen to the voice inside your head, listen to the universe, just sit and meditate for a split second. You know that there's, well, a bunch of you most likely listen to this show, you've had probably very spiritual experiences. First year I ever surfed, I always was told that there was this amazing spiritual thing about surfing, that it wasn't just getting on a board and riding a wave. And I could never understand it until I was out there one morning. It's probably 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm freezing my butt off about this time of year. I'm out with a couple other guys my age because we're longboarders. And there was an amazing moment where it was as if I was not on planet Earth. I was in some heavenly dimension of existence. And there was a really light, misty thing going on where the ocean water was very glassy in between waves. And so it was doing that little pitter-patter of almost like sleet falling into the ocean. It wasn't sleet. I don't know what it was. And that, just that harmony of that breaking of the, you know, the tension on the top of the ocean water and sitting on this board. And if you've, any of you have ever surfed, just getting out there initially is the daunting thing, you know, and I did it in my 40s, or probably my late 30s, I guess, but I was not in shape. But I want to take a second to shake your mind a little bit. And this is going to be, I don't know, I'm going to see if I can put this into words and not spend half an hour doing it. I think that from birth, obviously, we are taking on paradigms, as I've said several times, just to survive. You have to understand who your mother is. You have to understand if you're in the wild, what a breast is, or you're not going to eat. And once you get to hard food, you're going to have to figure that out. Things are dangerous. Fire, don't touch. You know, that animal wants to eat you. Those kind of things. And what I think is that we, by the time we get to a scientific level of thinking, even 15 years old, but more so every decade that passes, we get so wrapped up in solid state matter, big things. You know, a BB is a huge thing when you're talking about ethereal particles and this super subatomic thing that we're discussing here, that when someone comes up to you with subatomic physics, I remember when I was first getting into quark research, because I lived up in the Bay Area, we had a collider up there, Stanford Library, I mean, plenty of brilliant people to talk to about things. It seemed almost like you were going into a difficult thing to think about. Like thinking about an infinite number set. You're going, how do you think about that? It immediately pops your brain. In fact, the more intelligent you are, the more sentient you are, the more drug-free you are, and you start to think about infinity, you immediately account for every single spare slot in your brain that could conceive of a growing number set. And quark research felt like that. So now, if I want you to go, perhaps, I don't know how many levels down below that an ethereal particle would be, but perhaps 1,000 orders of magnitude down. Man, how do you start thinking about it? The key, in my opinion, is water. Water is probably where I think ethereal particles dance freely. The same goes for atmosphere, gas. Every time I take a puff on this cigar, and you can see it in the camera, as you meditate and just sort of let the clouds flow off the camera, those movements are 100% indicative of ethereal movements. 100%. As it is above, so too is below. It might be the single most brilliant scientific statement that has ever been uttered or understood or transmitted to man. Because it solves all problems. However, what it's really doing, in my opinion, depending on your intellect and your scientific background, or your ability to absorb these things, regardless of your background, Because you could just be built to absorb it. Is that it really, when you understand that theory, it's like someone teleporting you to the beginning of the Yellow Brick Road in The Wizard of Oz. You're right where the Munchkins are. Your journey is just beginning. Because where you could go in this particular road is not just to Oz. But Oz would be a good place. Well, let's define Oz as the city where all ethereal particles are understood. Where the ecosystem of the city itself survives 100% on ethereal motors, ethereal technology, and nothing higher than that. The other one is that in the 20th century, with the help of Einstein and a bunch of other folks, the conservation of energy principles out there start to teach you that all mass and all energy comes in limited energy packets. Quantum physics in general will go that route. That immediately starts to get you to think that everything is very, very limited in the universe, and that if rich people can convince poor people to surrender all their patents and their knowledge and build factories that create, say, electricity, that they can now sell it to you for the rest of your life. When, if we were just to go back, even just 100 years, I mean, Tesla was alive and well 100 years ago. And we tap into his brain and we say, okay, there's a war going on, buddy. You're not going to live more than 20 years more, and they're going to try to erase you. So, dude, do us a favor. Create an invention or create a book, a few paragraphs that will explain to us your perception of ether and the universe, especially as it relates to energy generation, such that there's no patent. You're still going to be broke unless someone says, thank you for paying for all the electricity in the world. You can stay in our hotel for free. So that we can escape this perception that we have that we're so stuck where we are. One of the things that's interesting with some of the conspiracies out there is that we'll have like conspiracy like, for instance, this is not what this episode's about, that the moon was placed there. There's a bunch of books about who made the moon. You know, David Icke is on this new thing in the last 5 years that he says it's a mothership and he's got the bowels of it all figured out. I mean, give me a break. But anyway, I respect him very much for what he does. But moving a moon into place. How far away is man from ever being able to do that? A long ways away, right? Because the amount of energy that we would have to control as man to move something that's 1,100 miles in radius, well, that's huge. But the one thing I love about Wizard of Oz that relates back to this episode, potentially, is the wizard wasn't a stupid guy, but he was a manipulator. He said to the lion, look, you have the courage. You've demonstrated your courage. That's why you're here. Tin man, you've always had a heart. Straw man, you always got a brain. And Dorothy, this is the one that applies to us. You've always had the power to go home the whole time. Just click your heels. There's something phenomenal about someone telling you who knows that you actually have the power to figure all this stuff out. But we don't get that as a human race ever, do we? Just think about it. Like, when has anyone stood up at a speech and really convinced people, besides like maybe a graduation speech where the, you know, the elders of the community always try to tell the kids how great they're going to be, and that's a good thing to tell them because they can if they want to. But when does a president of a country, let alone a monarchy, isn't it weird how monarchs just hide in their castles all year long? Like, why keep these people around? It just blows my mind. But someone coming out and saying, guess what, folks? Like, let's say it's an alien race that comes down, or it could be us, looks just like us or whatever. And they say, look, we are you, and you are us. We are at a higher level because we didn't grow up inside this container that you're growing up in. But just so you know, your DNA comes from our DNA. We put you in this thing. there's a little experiment we're going on. But you actually have in your genetics all the knowledge to make this entire universe. The problem is when you wake up as a human being, as a baby coming out of your mother's womb, the paradigms of this universe are so constraining that you never have the budding thought to consider any of this. And therefore, it's inaccessible to you, say, after 4 years. Tesla was very sick as a child for a short bit, nearly killed him. And he said that as he was sitting in bed, which his father, I guess, brought him books to read, he said he had the epiphanies that really gave him the idea that he wanted his whole life to be about electronics, electrical theory, I should say. Later, he got into electronics. And so from a very young age, he had this precept of he can do it. When he set out to create the AC motor, he didn't have a doubt in his mind he would be able to make it happen. And many of us have had those moments in life where something that's impossible to most people is an undoubtable, successful thing that you're going to do. And it's that perception that Steve Jobs' reality distortion field they always talked about that gets people over the hump. All those engineers, those the 15 people that work with Steve to make the Macintosh computer, half of which are a bunch of douchebags who take interviews and money to take a shit on Steve Jobs. When without him, they wouldn't have been anybody. They would have been a little engineer for a few years of their life, would have been a nobody forever, would have participated in nothing significant in their life. But they lived inside his distortion field of trust and belief that he had in them to get the impossible done. And then he went off and did it again for the next computer. It doesn't even matter if the computers were successful. When you invent something that no one's ever seen, well, that's a college degree no one can take away. It's an award that no one can mess with. So, let's just say we are all victims of the natural progression of life, the serendipity of life itself. But we don't want to be like that. We want to short-circuit ourselves. Sometimes you can just stay on the fringe. I think my whole game is that I've been on the fringe of, for whatever reason, reading something that's official, and then for whatever reason, I don't know why, I never had an adult that I can remember that said, oh, but this might be wrong. I probably never pissed off my physics teacher more than the day I said, what if MC squared equals MC squared is wrong about the threshold of mass going the speed of light. And I just saw him look at me and just kind of go, yeah, don't do that. Like, I'm trying to get through the basics with these other kids, and you're off in some thing I'm not qualified to talk about. Again, if my teacher had the internet back in the day, he would have been a very interesting guy. So can we shock our system into thinking a little bit differently? And I think, yeah, pretty damn easy. You just have to kind of say to yourself, well, what works out in a laboratory and is provable is something we can hang on to. We have to be careful about how we interpret what we think we're seeing, because we could see something and it could look like something else and we get it wrong. I'll give an example. I just watched this funny, weird video. There's this great doctor. He's this Asian guy, very handsome dude, looks really cool. He does these videos that are about 25 minutes long, and he goes and finds a case where something weird happened to a person where they didn't know they had ingested a poison or something. They did a little stunt for the internet, and he talks about how it affected their body and how they nearly died. And I don't think I've ever seen one where the patient passes away, but he just did one where a woman ate 5-day-old sushi from a gas station, and nonetheless, is a working woman. She came home really tired one night, knew she's really hungry. She knew she didn't eat. She wouldn't be able to sleep. So she ate this stuff. It took 9 months, I believe, before she went to the doctor because she had a seizure in her house. Well, long story short, she went to the hospital, I think, up to 2 times before they actually took a stool sample and found the fact that she had a tapeworm in her body. And not only did she have a tapeworm, she had the species that can grow up to 30 feet. And she was taking B12 because her body was very depleted of nutrients because the tapeworm was eating it all. She was pounding B12, and it was better for a little while, and then eventually she got bad again, had another seizure. It's because that particular tapeworm consumes B12. So it was just robbing her of everything. But so the doctors saw the effects. They looked in all the books, compared all their mental knowledge, all their, you know, practical knowledge of things. They were getting the diagnosis wrong until they looked into a different place. And then poof, they killed that thing and she was much better instantaneously. We are told things, and I'm going to give you an example that I've given a long time ago, but it's another one of these mind-numbing weird things. And for those of you who are flat earthers, you're going to love this. When we are told in classic astronomy / cosmology that the sun is this ball of fire, very, very huge, randomly, you know, 93 million miles away and some change, and that the moon, which is in an elliptical orbit, which vacillates up to 5,000 miles in its elliptical orbit around Earth, but that we have, I think it, the number is if you stand in any place on planet Earth during a clear day, every 27 years, you can see a solar eclipse. And the moon completely blocks the sun perfectly, where you get this block. It's only for a split second. Then you get the ring of fire on one side, and then it's over. I saw one of these when I was 9 years old in Kansas. And I don't know if it was 100% eclipse, but my God, the whole neighborhood turned black night. It was like 6 o'clock in the summertime. So we are told that this random ball in space and this other random ball in space, although millions of miles away from each other, okay, for all intents and purposes, the sun is 93 million miles away from the moon too. But their radiuses are perfect, such that solar eclipses happen every year somewhere on Earth. How's that possible? I mean, we swallow all of the cosmology. But like many people have recently discovered in the last 5 years, we are really relying on a ton of information that we can't confirm as human beings, given to us by organizations that are wrought with corruption. Some of it's for vanity. Some of it's for control. Some of it's so that tenured professors don't have to learn anything new their whole life. Imagine if you're a history professor and you became very informed about the Civil War, and you teach that in a college, a bunch of advanced courses in the Civil War, and, you know, obviously you're going to teach it with lessons involved and things. And as time progresses, you're learning more information as more history is discovered. But overall, you get to kind of focus. And even if nothing else is discovered about the Civil War era, you still have a boatload of information that new students do not have in their mind, therefore you are useful your whole life. But now imagine you're a Pangea Drift person, and someone reminds you and tells your students, hey, you know what, that's all crap. It's expanding Earth. Really sorry. All the proof's in the pudding. The proof's right there on the surface of the Earth. You'd have to be in some huge, huge pie of denial to not acknowledge it. This is something the Flat Earth people have to deal with as well. Okay, so you tell the tenured professor who's been teaching Pangea Drift for 20, 30, 40 years, you got to change your game, bro. It's all wrong. The Peter projection map of the Earth reshapes all the continents on Earth. They generally look the same, but they're elongated vertically. They've been trying to get that into the schools, and I think Massachusetts, 2 years ago, decided to go ahead and get rid of all the normal globes and go to the Peter projection map because they want kids to know the truth about the shape of things. Well, this tenured professor is going to have to be an innovative cat, man, to go, yeah, I want to risk my entire career switching over to this other paradigm, of which is actually older than Pangea. But what happens? The oil companies go, hey, 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 you can't be teaching Expanding Earth because that teaches kids about methane gas turning into crude oil, thus making it not a fossil fuel. So these are the precursors. I guess I did just take a half an hour, 20 minutes to do that. But these are the precursors in my mind that have to be conquered before we're going to be able to have a decent conversation about what might actually be putting this universe together. If you're a Matrix person, what's interesting about the ether being the medium by which the Matrix illustrates our reality is that you could do probably time travel because we're actually not moving around the universe like we think. For those of you who've had to digest, you know, when you're young, you just think, I'm just going to make a time machine. We'll go back in time. Makes sense. And then you realize if we're really hurling through the universe at some incredible speed, well, when Lincoln existed, it was millions, gazillions of miles away from where we are now. So to go back in time and see even the light that reflected off of his body, you can't be where we are. You have to be where he was. But imagine time travel is possible. The Dark Five guy had an episode. Dark Five is the channel. It's Dark Files is his other one. I think it's on Dark Files. But he talks about, on one of the two channels, this invention that the Vatican has rumored to have that is very much like the one in what the invention allows you to do, supposedly, is it's like a frame and you look into it and you can see the past. It's all hokey, you know. Again, if they had that kind of power, we wouldn't be in the place that we are now. We'd probably be in some horrible universe because, again, I mean, I don't know. Maybe looking only into the past would be limiting. If you can't travel to the past and change somebody's life, thus changing the future, then maybe it's just an interesting way to kind of know what really took place. But if time travel were possible on any level, it would have to be a Matrix, in my opinion. Because maybe all a time machine would really do is interrupt the program that is us. Yeah. Remember Time Bandits? They had little maps. They could travel through these portal doors and go anywhere in time and play in place that they wanted to. They're all little back doors that were left behind by God. There was a map of them all. We're all worried about, you know, apocalyptic moments taking away our luxuries of life that we have become completely dependent on, at least in our current form. With ethereal knowledge, what's interesting about it is that you would never, if you have just a basic knowledge of how ethereal particles can be harvested in a either a torus-shaped object or even a solid bowl that's made of a conductive metal, like a brass solid bowl, you could turn it upside down, hang it from a tree, pull leads down off of it, and you can run a little motor off that. Well, you know, you're in the forest and you got some electronic stuff that needs a little bit of power. You could at least go, well, at least I could turn this thing on. I can't run an electric motor Tesla car. But if charging it up and you can get the minimum voltage to create a charge, maybe you could. You know, who knows, man? When I sit in my backyard and do these shows, there's just a part of me that when I look at a tree, look at a bush, look at a bunch of ivy, it's bizarre how I feel an age of a personality from each plant. Not just a consciousness, but I feel its age. I feel almost its attitude towards reality. I feel like some things that bloom a lot and have shorter lifespans, they are a little bit more kind of like wild animals where they're just like, we're just living, we're just surviving, we're just procreating, you do your thing. When I look at a tree, I feel like I'm looking at an elder that is, for whatever reason, I get a vibe that it's much more interactive with human beings than other plants. I don't know why. You wouldn't question the fact that a plant is alive, but because it doesn't have eyeballs and legs and speech capabilities that we have been able to create, we tend to think they're not alive in a way that is conscious. We can minimize them, chop them down, turn them into toothpicks, no problem. You ever wonder why when you eat food, it translates to energy? You're thinking, well, God, I wonder how it does that. I wonder, I'm eating a bunch of vegetables. How does that translate into energy? If you think about ethereal particles and the fact that currents of ethereal particles constitute everything that we acknowledge as mass, then simply absorbing those ethereal currents, which have force, turns into power. Because an electron is the collision of dielectric wave and the magnetism wave hitting each other, well, guess what? You could actually be an organic being that could ingest anything, and everything will have electrons in it, and you're just peeling off the part of the energy frequency that your body just happens to evolve to have been. If you haven't seen the movie Lucy with Scarlett Johansson, which is a Luc Besson film, I mentioned it a few times, but I'm going to mention it in a slightly different context now. The movie's about a girl who's attached to this bad boy who gets himself involved in a drug deal, and she gets captured as a piece of collateral, and he's involved with being a physical drug mule, where they put the drugs inside your body and you fly through customs and then you have surgery and you make so much money you only have to do that one time in your lifetime. Well, I think he gets killed or something, the boyfriend. And she gets captured, knocked out, bunch of crazy drugs in her gut. I don't even know if this drug is a real drug. But she lands and she gets abused by her captor, and he kicks her in the gut a bunch. And that ruptures the bag that's inside of her gut. So she ends up taking in this mega, mega dose of this drug. And it starts to have profoundly positive effects on her being, in that she starts to really see the universe for probably what it's made out of without labeling anything. And the scene in the movie that's the most fascinating to me is when she steps outside for the first time. And she looks up at a tree, and she looks at humans, and she looks at all things, and she can see life force going through everything. It's a bit like Neo in the Matrix in 1999, when at the very end of the movie, he's looking down the hallway, and all those letters are dropping, right? But the letters are making up all things, and making up the hallway, the floor, the agents. Was it Mr. Smith's? At the end of the hallway. And what happened? They shot a bunch of bullets at him, and he just said, "I don't think so." And he just went, foof, and put his hand up, and all the bullets stopped and dropped to the ground. He had evolved like Lucy in a totally different manner within the Matrix, which is very interesting, such that he could just grab those bullets and say, "I don't think so." There are all these rumors, okay, that people who have meditated in Asia, those Tibetan temples, had reached a level of sort of immaterial existence where they could walk through walls. Again, I had a story told to me by I think it was a roadie for Rolling Stone. And they were touring over there, or he took a vacation over there or whatever, and he had hurt himself or gotten sick or something. And they crawled all the way up to this Tibetan temple because they were miles and miles, like hours and hours away from modern civilization. They got up there, and of course the locals are talking to the monks, and they don't really want to be disturbed. And finally they said, "Okay, we can fix you, but you got to go over to that place over there." And they pointed off the hillside, mountainside, at another temple, meaning they got to go all the way down, which took hours, and crawl all the way up. And here he is now feeling well. He said that when they immediately left, immediately started going down. 3 or 4 hours later, whatever it was, they got to the other temple, and all the people that they had met at the other temple were at the new one. And they're like, "How's that possible?" The American guy, or actually he was English, he goes, the guy looked like Rod Stewart. It was funny. He said, "I asked him, you know, how the hell did you get here? Because we were the first ones down the stairs and you didn't pass us. Nobody passed us. We didn't see any other human beings. How'd you get here?" And through translation, the dude went, "Well, we just came here. We went from there to here." And the guy was kind of embarrassed to tell me his story, but he's just, I don't even know how we got on the subject, but he told me that story and I was just, wow, okay. What if these stories aren't embellishments? What if they're real? The stories about finding people's skeletons, you know, embedded in stone walls as if they had just frozen walking through the wall, like they lost their concentration or something. It begs the question of how powerful the human mind might be to control its own resonating frequency through sheer meditation. What if you need training wheels, and the training wheels that you need are nothing more than these sound bowls, the frequency that will release you from your so determined frequency to be in this particular reality, to be able to touch everything that you can see, is this bowl. This bowl has a frequency that will free your mind and then your body, because we're all a vibration no matter what. What if it's not a joke that the, or not an example that's incorrect, that the ether does go through your head first, which is the way we perceive it to go through the planets, through the top, then the bottom. I mean, what's top and what's bottom? Whoever conquers the hemisphere first gets to call it north. Probably that's the way it is. But what if it's just a mere thing that we stand on Earth, okay? And ethereal pressures is what gravity really is. And so, of course, it's just going to hit the top of your head first. And let's just say, because that's the little junction point between your soul and your brainstem, what ends up happening is you can actually control the ether yourself. I mean, obviously we're controlling ether because we can create thoughts. You want to go and imagine something. Well, then you're imagining electricity moving around inside your head. Or potentially you're imagining it from your soul down. Don't know. But I do believe your brain gets a copy of the thought. They're starting to try to, hook up sensors to the back of your head so they can see your dreams, they can see your thoughts. Total sci-fi 30 years ago, and they're getting better at it and better at it every day. Well, what if you're controlling this overall frequency of what's going through you such that someone just meditates at the conscious level in the brain, and you are resonating and moving the vibration of the new ether going through your body, thus resonating slowly in a gradual linear curve, all of your body. And if you just simply can be pointed at the right frequency, you can achieve this amazing existence that's more ethereal. Those that astral project. We think we see UFOs. We think we see aliens. At least for the last, I'd say, 15 years, we've heard the more advanced theory about the fact that the ufologists now believe that maybe these individuals are here with us, but they're in a different dimension of existence / observable reality, like all the sci-fi movies that have frequency dimensions and that sort of thing, and that they're merely vibrating into our frequency. Those portals that the kid in Newport filmed, where if you just look up Newport UFO portal, or Newport, California UFO portal, you'll see what I'm talking about. This white light shows up in the sky and gets bigger and bigger and bigger like a tear, and all these little white circular things start to fly out of it and they start to dance together and stuff, whether it's science fiction, special effects or something, I don't know. You could definitely do it. Definitely do it. Lock a camera down a tripod, film the sky, CG it in, and then run a filter on the footage to shake it like it's being moved around a lot. Yeah, you can do that. And that's without tracking. But you can see, hopefully by now, this potential that is right there for the taking. A new frontier in consciousness and thought. And what if it's... Let me give you a very interesting thing, at least in my opinion. We know at our level, we have a very collapsed paradigm of existence, meaning we don't see much. We have a very small envelope that we live inside of, at least unless you watch this show or you're someone that would watch this show. And so we have conversations like this one to peel away that paradigm and start opening it up. And it gets kind of messy when you open it up, because every potential thing that could happen in your mind has to be evaluated, and there could be a very busy, noisy, chaotic phase of your life where you're evaluating 99% crap to find the 1% needle in the haystack that's got some validity to it. None of us most likely have laboratory equipment, so it's all observable reality, thinking, and maybe a little bit of stuff in the backyard, but not much. But what if those that control the world, maybe they're aware of some of these things being real, but they lack because of their obsession on control, their obsession on Luciferian crap. They realize, well, I don't like thinking because thinking is hard. And so as long as you tell me, my minions who sell their own people out for a paycheck, as long as you tell me that they are not thinking about these things and that you're going to use my money and my power structure to get rid of them if they happen to have the thought, then I'm good just not thinking about anything. Let's just not even try to go there. I own the whole world, whatever. Okay. So if you're Luke Skywalker in the middle of some Iowa farm and you start thinking like this, whether it's serendipitous or somebody suggested that this might be possible, that you're the first person to figure it out, to go somewhere, do something different, to do some alchemy and some magic just by thinking with your mind. Then you start to become a little superhero. Get enough of these folks going, where that person actually figures out how they did it, and they can describe it to their cousin, their brother, their sister, their buddy. And then that person could do it. And you have to watch out who you tell these things to, because, you know, when Lex Luthor getting that power, well, maybe taking back the world might be a lot easier. I know it's a fanciful thing to say. We already know that thinking outside the box is now being penalized by them. Big tech, your political parties that hate it when you love life. To bring it into 2020, right now, a lot of people are scared to be in the same proximity of another human being. We're being conditioned, and the morons are right there, man. They're right there to make sure that you don't talk to the people you love the most. I got two friends of mine that had to have their holiday plans canceled because the family thinks they caught this thing. Nobody is suffering from any symptoms at all, but somebody took the test, and the tests aren't being tested, right? What is it? The guy invented the test, said 94% false positives. That's pretty bad. Would you take that test? I wouldn't take that test. Why? So they're trying to, in this particular year, start the process that they want to last forever, where we are terrified of being together. What revolution ever started with one person? None that I'm aware of. And so we have a few mediums for the time being to study and share like crazy. But now let me throw this scenario at you before we finish. Let's say, because morons are more prevalent than people like you, that everyone just keeps sucking on this hose. They just keep swallowing all of this propaganda. And for whatever reason, let's say your military is on board because they'll all take a paycheck to go to hell. That's really what it's going to be about. Whatever hell is, they're going to find out. And so they enforce this nutty crap. So now you're quarantining yourself. So now all you have is your mind. You can't get any more mind talk. You can't talk to your buddies or anybody. Believe me, as crazy as this sounds, okay, they are going to figure out a way to demonize Zoom calls for health reason. And you think that's crazy? They're going to do it. They're going to try to make any type of communication illegal. Maybe you don't take the vaccination and they say that you can't have a Zoom call unless you can prove you've had it. I mean, they're going to do it, trust me, if we don't make a huge change here real short. All right. and you're stuck by yourself. That's why you're going to want to have absorbed as much open-minded thinking, just the formula for it. Forget the subject, forget ether, forget anything specifically. You're going to want the archetype built into your mechanics of your mind to be as sharp and as healthy as it possibly can be before that kind of thing occurs. If you value that type of communication, then you have to stand up and fight against any of this stuff that's going on. It's baseless. I keep seeing these memes, to digress for 1 second on this note, where people are comparing Spanish flu to 2020. There is no comparison whatsoever between that event and today. Zero. Okay? That's a completely different thing. And that thing, H1N1, killed. I think safely we can say, and the people try to go with the low estimates. The low estimates are 30 million people dead, not infected, dead. But the real numbers are probably more like 75 to 100 million people. The country of India reported 20 million by themselves. So these ridiculous estimates of 30 is absurd. I think Polynesians lost a double-digit percentage of their entire population. This was nightmarish. Nothing they put on their face ever helped them, ever. Ever. Probably helped them from getting other stuff, but not this one. So don't let that one get thrown in your face to rationalize taking away your ability to be free and think the way you want to think. The sad thing about ethereal technologies is that you don't have any formal place to go in the universe, I should say the world, I always do that, to have this conversation intelligently. However, I was on a business call probably 3 months ago. We did some 3D work for a group, and the CEO was rattling on about something very interesting about our project, and then I don't know how it worked out, but I was showing him some prelim stuff from the 2001 intro. And I said, well, you know, I usually don't tell folks this, but since my buddy that you met me through knows about this, might as well. And I said, you know, I got this channel. And I said, you know, I'm into a lot of things. And I said, you know, one of the big ones I'm in is ethereal technologies. And the dude goes, what? And he goes, man, I'm a huge ether guy. He's a brilliant dude. And I was like, really? And so we got to talking, and he says, send me your episodes on Ether. And so I picked out a few of my faves and sent them over to him. Never heard back from him, but he's a busy guy. But we also have this reemerging pre-dynastic research on Egypt. Super exciting. Whole new frontier, man. And so when you take this theory in there, for instance, I was watching some, I was showing Dark Fide to a friend of mine. And it was on some episode where he was talking about wild natural anomalies. And he was talking about there is this gravity anomaly on the Earth's crust. And it was at a point where what they thought was a meteor impact had occurred. Maybe it's an earthquake, you know, or a big blob from the beginning of the Earth's crust being formed, whatever. But they couldn't figure out why this gravity anomaly occurred, where gravity seemed to be less at this particular location than every other place on planet Earth. And I turned to my buddy and I said, look, here's what's going on. Ether is gravity. Ether pushing down on human beings in a non-permeable ball we call the Earth is gravity. It's a push, not a pull. That crust is thinner at that impact. Thus, the ethereal existence of plasma at the center of the Earth is now bubbling up from that thinner part of the crust. Thus, things have a slightly less weight to them because they're getting ether up their hole as well as through their head. There you go. Problem solved. The dude actually ended up mentioning something about scientists theorizing this might be occurring because the crust is thinner, but because they've got this bogus definition of gravity, which would make it unified around the world because the world has its mass, and because they think it's particles pulling against particles, a thin crust wouldn't change anything. You go to ether models, solved instantaneously. Those are the great things you can figure out and listen to traditional science and translate it. Translate it to be bogus like the Big Bang, or translate to something legitimate like a thinner crust on Earth supplies more equilibrium between the push and the pull. Or there's two pushes, basically, making you a little bit lighter. It doesn't take long to look at megalithic structures to find out that, yeah, you know, we probably, I mean, let's just say that you believe in the giant human beings. The Native Americans showed the first Europeans that came over, where the Smithsonian stole all the bones and lost them. Even if you had a bunch of 25-foot human beings, you do not change the overall weight of a basalt 100-ton box or potentially a 1,000-ton box before it's carved out. You don't. A bunch of 25-foot tall people are not going to exponentially turn them into ants that can hold, you know, 100 times their weight or 1,000 times their weight. But ether immediately starts solving the problem. Now, I will tell you that there was one part of my video that I forgot to mention in that megalithic series I did, the two. There's a rock they found in South America that, when cut into an H shape, puts off an amazing electromagnetic field around it. And they made a bunch of these things. But when they find this rock natively in a mountain and they put a compass up to it, it doesn't move at all. Cut it into an H shape with a bunch of inset angles into the H, it moves a compass because it's changing the magnetic pole around it. So what I forgot to mention was, what if you were to create thousands of these H's, literally, and when linked together, they start becoming exponentially more powerful. But because they are in a chain, there's a limit to the exponential amount of energy that they put off. But now, you take a big-ass rock that would normally weigh 100 tons, and you push it over the H's. You know, it's tough. It's tough to get a bunch of humans to get over the H's. But all of a sudden now, it weighs a ton. And then you just build whatever you want to build, take up the H's, put them someplace, break them down for some other reason, leave some of them behind, which is why we found some of them. Ether technology, way before the wheel. It's just serendipitous, man. Could be that one of these rocks might have formed into an H-like shape. And somebody realizes that when you put a rock on that particular weird rock, it floats. And so they just kept building more and more and more until magic happened. Technology's lost once the culture disappears. And we find ourselves buying units of power. We find ourselves in the 21st century unable to build the pyramids. This is why this stuff is utterly fascinating to me. If you're interested in ethereal sciences, I can't recommend anyone more than Eric Dollard and his lectures. Sometimes lectures have nothing to do with ethereal technologies, and sometimes he'll just pass over. He'll present a bunch of ethereal stuff. He believes it. And so he's like, yeah, that's the way it works. Whatever. And you're like, oh my God, go back, you know. So you're going to have to ingest quite a bit. But again, you might be the missing link in all of this observational reality. You're going to see it, and something's going to occur to you that it's not occurring to me or anybody else on planet Earth. 8 billion people, let's say, and you're the only one that knows. That's why I want to encourage you guys to reach out, take some time out of your life, if this is remotely fascinating to you, and see if you can see something new. What I haven't done and what I need to figure out is that there is a way to create a wire at least 7 feet long, a couple meters, and you can wave it in the air. And that's the way that the OG electronics guys, electrical guys, figured out the ether exists. Dollar did it at like 11 years old. So that dude knows. I just don't know how to get a hold of that guy. So it allowed them to notice ether and also determine its speed. And that's phenomenal to me. Just a very easy little experiment. So let's see what we can do here. And let's check the temperature, because it sure feels like it's cold out here. It's still 44 degrees Fahrenheit. All right. That's our number. Anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go there and bookmark it just in case we get moved around by big tech. We will always exist in some form or fashion. If nothing else, the videos will be posted somewhere and I won't delete the channel. I think that's always a weird thing people do. I mean, I guess if I have an epiphany of some sort and think, oh my God, those are the worst videos I've ever made in my life. Maybe so. But it's like a tattoo. It's part of your life. On there, we have video, audio, social media, all renew, mastered season one, a store, and two ways to contribute to the site. For those of you who are passing me donations through PayPal, thank you so much. Again, normally it wouldn't be a big deal, but in 2020, every penny helps. While I'm resetting my career over to 3D and waiting for Hollywood to turn back on in terms of script evaluation. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. The other, as it above, as the blah, blah, blah.